Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
She was a mother, a grandmother, and a woman whose final years were marked by confusion, heartbreak, and silence. When Mary Wilcox vanished from her daughter's home in rural Vermont, the truth stayed buried until it didn't. This is her story.
Hi, I'm Vanessa.
And I'm Amy.
And you're listening to She Goes by Jane.
At the end of this episode and every episode, we will be joined by a special guest who will read an original poem by Amy Baker about the women we're featuring.
This week, we are joined by Ashley Williams.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Amy.
Vanessa, we're going to get started on today's episode. Before I do, I have some content warnings. So we are going to cover kind of a few uncomfortable topics, which include Alzheimer's, and also we're going to talk about suicide and suicidal ideation, which is not always everyone's listening preference. I do think we cover a lot of really important things in this episode, including trying to cover this story. And before we get into it, I also want to say that I don't actually know a lot about this woman. I'm going to address that later on, but
okay.
Yeah, that's just to set the stage for this.
So we're, in addition to the usual not fun things we talk about, we're about to talk about some other not fun things.
Yeah, this one has just many,
many layers of unfun.
Yeah, I mean, we do not shy away from, obviously, hard topics. And honestly, it's impossible to talk about missing persons case without those. But yeah. I think as well, just because it's touching on these specific topics, I thought I would just address it up front.
Right. And I think I'm always the kind of person who's like thinking it's beneficial a lot of the time to talk about hard things. And I think we're kind of doing that with this podcast, right? Like sharing the importance of actually speaking about these things. So
right. Yeah.
So we'll get through it.
Yeah. Because I also feel like we are, as you know, podcast hosts, it's growing through having these conversations. Right? Okay. So
yes.
Also, for Vanessa and I, this episode takes place in what I would consider our local region.
Right. So this is very close to.
Yes. So this is a Vermont case.
So it's a matter of hours away from us, just a few.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So yeah, a lot of personal topics. Yes.
Okay. So let's begin.
Okay.
The first notice doesn't hit Vermont papers until Sunday, November 12th, 2006. Mary Wilcox, a 78-year-old woman from the small town of Westford, Vermont, may be lost in the woods. Mary, who has Alzheimer's, was last seen at the home of a family member on Thursday at around 10 a.m. When the family member returned home later that afternoon, they found her missing. By the time the news of Mary's disappearance hit local papers, authorities and volunteers were already engaged in a full-scale search of the wilderness areas surrounding Westford. With nighttime temperatures dipping down into the mid-30s at night, time was of the essence to find Mary, who was likely confused and disorientated. But searching the over 1,600-acre wilderness area was an impossible task. And as the days ticked by with no sign of Mary, it became increasingly clear that if she was out there, she wouldn't be able to survive. On Monday, just 4 days after Mary was last seen, State Police Lieutenant Dee Glynn told reporters they were suspending their search and that, barring any other information, we'll certainly jump on that if and when it comes in. We've covered everything that we can cover. We've had no more sightings of her. When pressed about whether or not the state police believed that Mary was still alive, Glynn said, "It's probably unlikely if she's been out in the elements for this extended period." And with that, Mary Wilcox was added to Vermont's unsolved missing persons list.
Okay, so Mary's 78, she has Alzheimer's, and she was last seen at the home of a family member.
Yes.
Was anybody there with her?
No. So she is living with her daughter and son-in-law. So her son-in-law is away on business for an extended period of time, and so she's there with her daughter.
And her daughter left her home alone?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm just going to be honest here and say that my mom, and Amy knows this, so this is part of the preface of this episode. My mom has Alzheimer's, and it's hard to think of somebody leaving somebody with Alzheimer's alone because they do tend to want to wander off. I mean, how many times have we tried to find my mom in the past few months? She's gone off either with the car when she could still drive or by foot, and it's always the most terrifying thing. I mean, we've had police involved in helping locate her and other family members, and I think somebody with a parent with Alzheimer's would know.
Right. Yeah.
How hard it is to get them back when they wander off. So it's so important to stay with them. But anyways, I'm going to listen to the rest of this without judgment of Mary's daughter.
Right. I mean, and definitely your mom is a wanderer.
My mom is a little roadrunner. Right. She likes to, she's small and fast.
And she covers a lot of ground.
She covers a lot of ground really quickly. She's physically extremely fit and she covers a lot of ground. And I love her to bits. And it's always horrifying when she gets loose. So,
and that is with
my dad and I don't want to deal with that much more than we already have.
Right. That's so. Like your mom has your dad. Like
my dad is like a hawk. He watches her and she still gets away.
Right. She just like slips out.
Yep. Yeah. She's fast.
Yeah. So yeah. So as we kind of have the continuation of this conversation, Vanessa will probably jump in with some of her thoughts and feelings.
Possibly. I don't know. We'll or see not. How I'm feeling when we get there. Maybe it's going to be, this is experimental for us. Amy mentioned this and I'm like, yeah, I think we can talk about that. I'm like, I don't know. I may either have too much to say or not enough to say because I can't predict how I'm going to be feeling. So I'm just feeling really bad that Mary's just out there for that long, and I'm assuming that her family is out of their minds.
So yeah, because
right, because it's not fun. I've been there, and almost every time it happens, I'm like, oh my god, I don't want to be covering my mom's story one day. Like,
right, yeah.
So it's just anyone out there who has been dealing with this, my heart is with you.
Mm-hmm. Now, Vanessa, as we talk about this story again, I would like to tell you everything I can about Mary, but there's really just very little information available about her. So I can tell you she was born in 1928. She had three children, one girl and two boys, and we also know she was a grandmother. But beyond that, much of Mary's history and what she was like or what she did for work or hobbies, like all of that just isn't available. And like, you know, that's like one of my particular like frustration points. Like I'm always heartbroken when this happens because there's not necessarily a paper trail for someone. And I like, we can't tell a further story of who they are outside of their disappearance, which is one of the primary ways that we try to make She Goes by Jane a bit different, is try to tell a lot about who the person was. Right.
Right. And what we have here are not good things to tell.
No.
She's 78. She has Alzheimer's and she disappeared, like nothing about her.
Nothing, right? So yeah. So in particular, like she has lived for 78 years.
Right. There's like, been so much before the Alzheimer's, so much before the disappearance. Right. Like, you know, there's got some like fun stories and good hobbies and like what her job was. I don't know. We can only imagine and hope that she had like an amazing life before that all happened.
Right. Now, one of the things that I think this does, though, is it opens up a conversation about the erasure of older people in narratives, particularly missing person stories, right? And to like an even finer point is like when someone is dealing with Alzheimer's, like we often reduce them to kind of to their diagnosis, right? Like, so it's just like another layer of erasure that's happening here as well. And, you know, like I've been doing this kind of research for a long time, right? And Mary's story is going to take some pretty heartbreaking turns as we are kind of talking about her case. But I'll say this, like, if Mary was younger or didn't have Alzheimer's, the newspaper articles that covered her story would likely have included a wealth of information and details about who Mary was. And that is notably absent in the reporting about her case. So all of that being said, Mary's diagnosis becomes a central feature of her actual disappearance case. So I'm really stuck in this situation that I hate in our efforts to call attention to cases like this, because Mary is, of course, more than her disappearance, and she's more than her diagnosis. And if I could provide information in the future about anything about Mary's life and existence, then I absolutely will, because this is all very heartbreaking to me. That
maybe somebody's listening and knows something about her. We can like update in the future and be like, right. Mary liked to knit, or Mary loved dogs, or, you know, whatever it was. Like, it would be nice to have like those little details about mm-hmm. her, like you said, beyond her diagnosis. The other thing that I'm just going to say right now before we get into this too is that this kind of like fits into almost that thing where, like, you know how when we talk about teenagers, particularly like 13 to like 17, mm-hmm. everybody is so quick to be like, that's a runaway. This right. person's a runaway. And that always just like, we know that that's not always a thing. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things, like, when my mom wanders off is I'm always worried about, like, what could happen to her right, while, like, she's out.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. She's mm-hmm. just one vulnerable, tiny little person out in the world.
Right.
By herself, not knowing how to get herself back, right? Mm-hmm. Anything can happen to her in that situation. And so, like, one of the things that I worry about is, like, if I ever reported her missing, at some point somebody would just be like, oh, she'll wander back, or she's, you know, it's just Alzheimer's, or like that as the reason, almost like the runaway thing, you know? And it is a reason, but we still have to get her back.
Right. Right.
Like, it's still important. So it's one of those things where, like, because somebody has a diagnosis, they still have feelings. Like, we still need to get them back and keep them protected and keep them comfortable and keep them.
Yes.
And not just brush it off as like, oh, you know.
You'll find her.
She'll turn up. She's probably not gone that far. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that ignores a lot of things about the types of dangers that anyone with Alzheimer's could encounter while they're out wandering.
Right.
You know.
Right. And most likely they are out there of their own, like, that's their own wandering, whatever. But what if somebody does something else?
Right.
We don't know.
Yeah. So that does mean that we just have to kind of jump into
kind
of like what happens in Mary's case, like just the basic details. So Mary lived again with her daughter and her son-in-law on Cambridge Road in Westford. And despite this town's proximity to the much better known and much more populated Burlington, Vermont, Westford itself is a town of just over 2,000 residents. But the area where Mary was living was even more sparsely populated. Houses are quite a distance apart. They're separated by fields and woods, and the property they lived on is about 7 acres. So kind of anyone who's available to like witness it, like her wandering, like chances are pretty low, right?
Just wandering in like country roads. So Westford mm-hmm. is it near Burlington?
Yeah, so it's not that far.
Oh, Jesus, like an hour from us then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is interesting because I am guessing you, like me, have not heard Mary's story.
I've not heard Mary's story, but I've also never heard of Westford, Vermont. So.
Yeah, but it should have, like, for both Vanessa and I, this should have been on our local news. But I don't remember it at
all. I don't remember it.
Yeah. Now, in the initial news report, a resident of the house that we'll later learn, of course, is Mary's daughter, said she saw Mary around 10 a.m. on Thursday again, right? By the time she returned, what's wrong?
Oh, nothing. Just.
Oh, okay.
I'm just picking up on your patterns. What's Mary's daughter's name?
Vanessa, I can't tell you that.
Okay. Ugh. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, Amy.
Yes. Now,
okay.
Where was I, Vanessa?
You were on Mary's daughter.
Yeah, so Mary's daughter saw her around 10 a.m. on Thursday. And by the time she returned around 3 p.m., Mary was gone. Now, despite how terrifying this had to have been, Mary wasn't reported missing until the next day. Now, Mary's initial disappearance is perhaps, again, not unusual, like we were talking about earlier, for anyone who has a loved one with Alzheimer's or dementia, right? Mm-hmm. And Vanessa, like, you are living this experience and I'm learning about this experience. So the numbers to me were quite staggering. Like, the Alzheimer's Association says that wandering is extremely common.
So well, yeah, I mean,
mom is out there wandering with all the other people with Alzheimer's.
Well, these are, you know, they go from being independent adults to all of a sudden mm-hmm. needing to be watched. They don't know that. They,
right.
You know. They think they should just be out doing the things that they always do. But then when they get out to do the thing, like, my mom knows very well where she's going. Like, she knows, like, I'm going to go to the post office. Mm-hmm. And I envision this because I don't know for sure because I can't ask her. But and then I think when she starts to go, she's like, oh, wait, where was I on my way to?
Exactly.
And then changes her mind and keeps changing that mm-hmm. mind. So it is terrifying. And I'm extremely, not being reported until the next day is dumb. I'm not going to sugarcoat it because,
okay. Yeah.
Like,
because we're also talking.
This is
November, right?
Right. Like, I have reported in, like, probably within an hour before.
Yeah. Now, okay. So, six out of 10 Alzheimer's patients will wander at some point?
That seems low.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You're like, it's 10 out of 10.
Thank I you. Feel like it's 10 out of 10 because I'm part of an Alzheimer's support group and every single one of us has experienced it.
Right. Now.
So those four fortunate families who do not out of the 10 experience it are very lucky.
Right. Which brings me to my next point, which is like, obviously like you very much, I'm suspicious when a disappearance is not
right
immediately reported. Right. And that like. But the reality is a lot of people do feel uncomfortable calling law enforcement right away for cases like this, right? Mm-hmm. Because the wandering is not an uncommon experience, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very common that family members are out there looking for their family
but
member.
But we've waited over 24 hours at this point, mm-hmm. too.
You're so like, no, we've reached past the critical point. Yeah,
no, I can understand if you want to do like a family search for the first even 3 or 4 hours, go for it. But like beyond that, especially when you're heading into like darkness or mm-hmm. cold temperatures, I don't know why you would want to not have help.
Now, by the time the disappearance reaches the police and the news, a significant amount of time has indeed passed. Now, Mary's daughter, she tells authorities that Mary may have overheard family members talking about placing her in a residential facility as the care for taking care of her became more complex and taxing. Mary's mother had also had Alzheimer's, which we know there's genetic components. And one of her personal fears was being placed in any type of facility like her mom had been. Her daughter said she worried that her mom, distraught by all of this, could have headed to Massachusetts or Pennsylvania, where she had other family members. And it's true that in the initial report, it said that Mary might have taken a small maroon carry-on bag from the house. Now, Mary's daughter, she spoke to local news stations to call attention to her mother's disappearance. She said that she preferred to think of her mom on a bus or a train somewhere rather than think of her in the cold and alone in the woods.
I'm not buying it.
Yeah, because that's actually the details.
I'm not buying it because she's going to forget where she's headed as she's heading there. Like, that's, you cannot expect this to happen unless she's in the very early stages.
Right, because
it doesn't sound like she's in the very early stages.
No, from my understanding, Mary is actually, from the sounds of it, well into her Alzheimer's journey, right? And so this statement about intention and execution actually gave me pause.
Right? I don't know.
Yeah, like, because we talked about this in our episode on Bessie Kutnick, because one of the theories in her disappearance was that she might have had undiagnosed Alzheimer's, right?
Right.
And in that episode, we brought up a point, which is how important it is for law enforcement to be trained specifically in searching for Alzheimer's individuals, because intent and execution are two different things. It's like when you're right. talking about your mom, she starts off with an intention.
Yeah.
But the execution is where things fall apart.
Because
right?
the logic is still there. It's the confusion. The memory is gone. So we're not able to piece those things together, like, or stay on topic, you know? We can't stay on the track anymore. Yeah. So we know what we're doing, but then we lose track and then mm-hmm. we veer into something else. So it's just, I don't believe that she could envision her mom packing and then remembering why she packed and then right. remembering that she's going to this place
and then executing
and getting on the bus. Like,
exactly.
And right. even if she's on the bus, there's only so long she's going to remember where she intended to go.
Right. And you know, like one of the things that is actually happening right now is like, you know, obviously as my friend, I know what you're going through with your mom. Mm-hmm. At the same time, several other of my friends have family members who are also mm-hmm. diagnosed with Alzheimer's. All of them have wandered.
Right? All of them. Right. So it's not, you're not experiencing the 6 in 10 either. Like I'm going to go with saying like at some point all of them will.
Right. And to all of them, when their family members have been found, they don't know why They are where they are.
They don't know why they left. Or they'll make up a story about why they left or where they were.
Exactly.
It's just, yeah, I'm not.
Yeah. So like one of my friends, they found her mom several states away at a hotel.
Well, my mom went into a different country.
Yes, your mom did.
And then into another province and then into another province. So, yeah, so it can happen. And when she's pulling up to those, I mean, there are people at the actual U.S. Customs letting her through.
Right. Because like,
because she looks completely like for in that moment, she knows what she's doing. She can hand the ID. She can do all of that. Mm-hmm. They just don't know that the second she drives through, she doesn't know why she went there.
In the first
this
place,
is my right? first time actually speaking about this, like besides anyone in complete and total private. So I am feeling weirdly like I'm betraying my mom a little bit by talking about it. But at the same time, she's not at a state anymore where she will mind or know.
Right.
And I'm doing this just because I think it's helpful for people to know and feel like if they're feeling like they can relate to this too, that they're not alone in some of these thoughts.
Exactly.
But, right. So it's going back to those hard topics.
Yeah.
But so I don't know. I'm learning slowly like how the mind works with some of these things and what her daughter's saying. Like she should know.
Right. Because like and this is true, like, though I am not in this situation, I'm observing so many people in my life who are in this situation, and this is not the experience that they're having, right?
Right.
So, like, in general, one of the things that we talked about with law enforcement is that a person will kind of wander until they experience, like, an obstacle of some sort, right? Like, they cannot move forward in their journey. So this idea that she's, like, potentially managed to execute a plan to get on a bus. So I was like, that seems weird. Right.
We'll be back in a moment.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It is much more likely that Mary could have set out in a direction with the intention of leaving. Mm-hmm,
definitely.
Got confused along the way. So actually the woods would actually be a more likely location for her, given that she left on foot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reality of Mary's situation prior to her disappearance was also not unusual. She had actually been in a residential facility in Williston, which is close to her daughter's house. While she was there, she exhibited signs of depression. Because the symptoms of depression can overlap with changes in behavior with Alzheimer's, it's actually tricky to diagnose clinically. But it does sound like Mary was diagnosed with depression, which adds a level of complexity to her care, right?
Those two things go hand in hand, too.
And then, while she was at this facility, she did have, at the very least, suicidal ideation. And what research has suggested is that, again, this is not unusual for those with Alzheimer's, right? And I really want to emphasize this, despite the fact that those feelings and these comorbid conditions are actually quite common with Alzheimer's patients, Mary's family was actually asked to remove her from the facility.
Do we have, like, a reason for that?
Yeah, so basically they say, like, this is beyond the scope of their care. So this woman who needs complex care, probably multifaceted approaches to her care, was removed from the care facility because they felt they couldn't meet her needs there.
Okay. And they didn't have, like, a facility that could?
No, they sent her off to her family. Now, that means that Mary ends up living with her daughter and her son-in-law, and we do have a lot of listeners outside of the U.S. So while this isn't likely news for our American listeners, it might be for the rest of the world, right? In the U.S., roughly 80% of those with Alzheimer's are cared for by family members, and the majority of their caregivers live with them, either in their home or at the caregiver's home.
Yeah. So, and I can say from people I've spoken to that, so, like, my dad is the primary caretaker with my mom, and we're trying to get it so that my family can help in that more, but it's hard because they live in Canada and we live here. But a lot of the people I know that end up having to care for, like, a parent full time, it takes a mental toll. And you're right, in the US there are not many resources to help. There are like many hoops you can jump through to get, like, in-home, like, care for a couple hours here or there, so you have time to, like, shower and go get groceries and do basic human things. I know people that have, like, never get to sleep Mm-hmm. Because they're like 24/7 taking care of their parent.
Exactly. Because in the US, like most often this is done without those additional supports. So like very often no respite care, like which is like the you can go shower, right? Or
exactly.
No in-home services or even out-of-home care. So it's hard to qualify for. It's hard to like make that happen, right? So essentially this facility like was able to say, no, we can't or won't care for her, even though we have medical staff and training, right? Mm-hmm. And they send Mary off to live with people who do not come equipped with any of that or any respite or assistance. Right.
Not equipped. And like my own mom has gotten considerably even like sweeter as she's gone through this journey, but not everybody does. Mm-mm. And so there's so many families that have like their parents turned kind of violent, mm-hmm. and now they don't have anybody to help. It's like, I know we're calling Mary's daughter, mm-hmm. and like in on this podcast, that usually means something, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to say that. She didn't go through a lot of crap
right
before. So like, I'm not being understanding of anything that comes later, but the initial caretaking is pretty intense.
It is pretty intense, right? Yeah. And I've you know, been on the sidelines watching a lot of people's kind of experiences of that. And I also know like my mom was a caregiver mm-hmm. to my grandmother through her undiagnosed dementia because it was like the early 1980s. And they were like, that's just old person, you know?
So like, you got to hear about like... how that went down. Yeah.
Yeah. And so eventually she also had to like, because her mother was Canadian and they were living in the U.S. And then she had to find like a care facility for her mom in Canada.
Right.
Not in the U.S.
Right. Right. I'm trying to petition to bring them over so that I can mm-hmm. have my parents here and help take care of them. But it's extremely hard and it takes a very long time.
Yeah. Because we have this like extra like trans-border complications.
Right? Yeah. 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 So it makes it very complicated, and I just want to be able to support my dad better through this, but it's probably going to be a while, mm-hmm. if at all.
Right. And yeah, so.
Yeah, sidetracked.
Where this is, again, just such a heartbreaking case. Okay, so when Mary's disappears, though, it just really feels like her case is just wrapped up pretty quickly. A few days of searching and just kind of a little bit of news coverage of her, and then just like nothing at all. Like, certainly her family was left without answers, but like her story didn't really get a lot of attention beyond that. But everything changes in early December 2009. That's when a woman who used to date Mary's grandson came forward with a story that she'd been holding on to for 3 years. She said that she knew what really happened to Mary and was willing to sign an affidavit about it. This woman, we're going to call her Jane, not because she did anything wrong.
Just to protect her.
Just protect her. Okay. She was with her boyfriend. We're just going to call him G.
Ew.
Which is our long-standing policy. Now, remember, G is Mary's grandson.
Okay. So that's... So this is... Is that Mary's daughter's kid?
Yes.
Okay. So okay. We've got G and the other one known just as Mary's daughter.
Yes. So G is a grown man in his late 20s.
Okay. I was about to ask. Yeah. How old is this guy?
Okay. Now, so Jane, a girlfriend. So that G's mom, Mary's daughter, asked G to come over to her house on Cambridge Road on November 5th. She wanted his help cleaning a handgun. Now, keep in mind that Mary officially goes missing on the 9th, though she's not reported missing until the following day. So this call is several days before that. Jane, who lives with G in Richmond, Vermont, goes with him for this task. And when they get to G's mom's house, he begins to clean a revolver. Jane said that she noticed that the revolver had 3 spent ammunition rounds in its cylinder, along with 3 bullets. After that, Jane says that G's mom asked him to build a fire outside on their fire pit. And Jane says she recalls G's mom saying that she wanted to burn some sheets that Mary had soiled to the point where they were no longer able to be cleaned. Hmm. Now, when they're done, the couple just went back home. And the next day, which would have been November 6th, G returned home after his day of work, and he told Jane that his mother had actually murdered Mary on November 3rd.
Whoa. Huh. Mm-hmm. So are we just cleaning the gun at that point to remove fingerprints and stuff?
So emptying out the spent rounds?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then... Yeah, because who doesn't just throw out bad sheets? Who burns them? I mean, I'm guessing some people somewhere do for some reason, but it's not mm-hmm. typical.
Yeah, so
Wow. Okay.
And then Mary's, you know, she's not reported missing until the 10th.
Right.
Right.
God.
Yeah. So again, I'm just going to pause here because this is just going to get a whole lot worse. So if you're squeamish, like, this is not for you. But I think sometimes, again, we have to stand in witness to kind of the things that happen to people and happen to someone like Mary. Now, G tells Jane that the fire he'd built the night before was actually to burn Mary's body. And that on the 6th, while he was at work, his mother came to his place of work, which was FabTech, which was located in Winooski. And when she was there, she handed him a yellow plastic suitcase and she asked for him to dispose of it. And when he asked what was inside, his mom replied, "Your grandmother."
Jeez. So is that before she was burned?
This is after.
So she burned her and then put her in a...
Yes.
Suitcase?
Yes.
Holy moly. Okay. Okay.
Right. Yeah. So,
Mary's daughter, yeah, she took a...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kind of an answer to what...
I feel like this was like the most horrible way that anybody could have done anything about the situation.
Right. Yeah. So in kind of answer to what you're asking, yes, it is part of Mary, like...
Her... Right. Okay. Because I was just like, I'm like,
how do you
hand off a suitcase with a person in it? Because that's heavy.
So for some reason, G would later tell Jane that the remains only consisted of some of Mary's spine and her skull, and that essentially not much of her remained after the fire, but I'm not sure how he knows that, and I don't want to know how he knows that.
Right.
Right.
This also seems
weird.
Really weird.
Now, G, it gets a little weirder. So G decides he's going to comply with his mother's request. So he and a coworker took the plastic suitcase.
What?
Yeah.
Wait. Okay, does the coworker not know?
I don't think the coworker knows. The coworker is never charged with anything, but why on earth, if your coworker was like, "Hey, let's dispose of this suitcase," would you say, like, "Sure"?
So did the person do it?
Yeah, so the coworker goes with him and they bury this suitcase behind the Westford Elementary School. And they bury it.
That whole sentence you just said is kind of wild.
I can't sometimes on this show.
Who helps somebody bury a suitcase? And why would you bury a suitcase behind an elementary school?
I have no idea. Because they're working in Williston and they drive all the way to Westford. Like,
what?
Why?
No.
And decide to go behind that. Like, why
Let's
would you
Let's not help coworkers bury suitcases.
I think this is one of those life lessons where it's like, if your coworker is like, "Hey,
help me bury this." Ask why.
Ask what it is. Don't do it anyway. I mean, that's right. Just a weird
request. What are you doing it for? Are you doing it for like a coffee? What are you doing it for?
No idea. Okay. Now, G also has a lot more, though, to tell Jane. He says that his mom had told him that Mary had attempted to commit suicide by shooting herself after learning that she would be potentially placed in this care facility, and that his mom had found Mary still alive after she had made this attempt. So she then shot Mary again, ending her life.
Hmm.
Now, Jane, she tells authorities that she has doubted this story ever since G had told it to her. She said that Mary was often disorientated and confused. She said that Mary also often needed help with daily tasks and really didn't seem lucid or capable enough to have found a gun in the house and attempted suicide in this way.
I believe Jane.
Now, Jane, why is she keeping this all secret? Like,
because it's scary.
Right. And also, apparently, G had threatened to kill her if she told anyone, and she believed him.
That's also scary.
Exactly. So when their relationship ended, she also got an order of protection taken out for a separate reason in family court. So after getting that order of protection, after the end of their relationship, she felt safe enough to come forward to share what she knew. So Mary's case, it gets turned from a missing persons cold case to an active homicide investigation with a missing body. Almost 2 weeks later, investigators question. I realize I haven't established an initial for Mary's daughter, and it's going to be bulky to keep calling her
Mary's daughter.
So we're going to call her S.
Mm-hmm.
S is questioned by authorities at her home about her mother's disappearance. And when police confronted S about what they knew, her story was kind of different than the one Jane had been told by G. In S's recounting of Mary's last moments of life, S says that Mary had been distraught again about the potential of being sent to a nursing home, and Mary had gotten a hold of a gun, and that as S was trying to wrestle it from her, the gun had gone off, and Mary was shot in the chest. S told investigators she wasn't sure if it was her or Mary who had actually ended up pulling the trigger during this tussle.
Yeah, this is so, like, come on. Come on. Like, I don't know. If she was distraught, it would have been for, like, 3 minutes.
Yeah, because, like, again,
she would not have known that she was going to a nursing home if she was still inside her daughter's house.
Right. So there's this, like, you know, how quickly Alzheimer's develops is really kind of based on the individual, right? But
right.
Mary kind of seems to be more in an advanced state where she, as Jane said, like really needing care and help with even daily tasks.
Right. So I'm not doubting that she was like the hospital or the facility said she was suicidal. I'm not mm-hmm. doubting that because that's something that can keep coming into her
right.
mind over and over and over exactly. again. But the following a timeline of like, oh, you will be sent to a nursing home. And then for her to be able to retain that information, like maybe she'll be able to keep getting that back, mm-hmm. but like to retain it long enough to get the gun. And then try.
Right.
Then it's like
we're talking about the execution.
We're of the talking plan, about right? like this chain of events that she'd have to follow through that I'm thinking would be unlikely for her to be able to do those in like a timely way that one to the next makes sense for her still.
It's like follow through those steps.
Right. Just to right. follow through them. And I don't know where Mary was in her progression. Maybe she was at the very beginning, but it really doesn't sound like it.
No, I mean,
We don't know. But like I said before, too, like on not that I ever think anyone should make any excuses for anyone, but S could have been not thinking clearly if she had been like overtaxed with like the care of her mother at that point, too.
Right.
So like, would it surprise me if somebody did something like this? Like, yeah, because it's awful, but also no, because people in really terrible situations are driven to do sometimes even more terrible things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the stories that are making don't make sense. The story I think happened makes sense.
Yeah. Now, on December 16th, S and G were arrested. And then the following day, they were brought to court. And S was charged with second-degree murder. She was held without bail. Mm-hmm. S's lawyer said that this was an accident between a mother and a daughter. The mother had Alzheimer's and could be combative. And my client saw her with a gun and tried to take the gun away from her. And the gun went off. The poor decision-making that went on afterwards is why we are here. Now, in response, the prosecutor, T.J. Donovan, said the evidence suggests otherwise, and that the action of burning a body in the backyard, putting the remains in a suitcase, and burying that suitcase on the grounds of an elementary school are inconsistent with an accident. Mm-hmm. Now, G is charged with a felony count for unauthorized burial or removal of a dead body. And it's during this arraignment that the public learns that G acknowledged during this investigation that he did bury his grandmother's remains. But in the years since, he tried to block this from his memory. He said he didn't remember much and didn't want to know more details. Now, while S is held in jail, G is released on the condition that he check in daily with police, not possess weapons, and abide by curfew until he has his trial. And as the two of them were being arraigned back in Westford, the elementary school was abruptly closed and all the children were sent home from school. Investigators gathered in the woods behind the school to look for Mary's body. They were primarily looking for a large rock on a trail. Jane had shared with investigators that G had told her that that's where he buried his grandmother's body. Though cadaver dogs were brought in, the reality is that they were working on few clues besides a rock and a trail. Major Ed Leto of the Vermont State Police said that of the search, you want to move away the debris on the ground to see if it's been disturbed or possibly dug, but with the snow first and bitter cold and not having a precise location where she's disposed of, it's very difficult. Because keep in mind, this is December in Vermont. Mm-hmm. And a mile and a half away on Cambridge Road, another search is happening at the family home. In this small town of Westford, everyone heard the news. The town clerk, Nanette Rogers, said, we're all in shock, like, oh, wow, I can't believe this happened in our town. We're a close-knit community, and it kind of rocks you. Now, locals watched as authorities carried bins from the fire pit area of the house, and it was clear what they were looking for and placing in those bins, right? Now, soon, with the realities of a Vermont winter, investigators actually had to stop searching the woods behind the school. Major Ed Leto said, "Unfortunately, Vermont and winter really doesn't help us out when we're trying to do this type of search. You're putting people out there in this weather, and the wind is blowing, and you're trying to dig through frozen ground. Not very productive." Now, the reality of any case is that the prosecution is, in many ways, easier to present to a jury when there is a body. Now, there's a ton of reasons for this, of course, but there's like any forensic evidence that could be taken from the body, anything that can pinpoint clearly suspects, right? Anything that would indicate how someone might have been shot, right? And there's also just like confirmation to a jury that this crime had indeed been committed. Now, meanwhile, as the year closed out, investigators searched for Mary's remains several times. So in April, they were yet again hampered by the weather with more snowstorms because, again, it's Vermont. We all have winter up here forever.
Yeah. Right?
They tried again in the summer, again with cadaver dogs. They even had G helping them by providing information. And one of the problems they cited, though, is that the landscape in the woods had changed a lot in the time since Mary disappeared. Despite this, the state was going to go forward with a trial, and S was offered bond while awaiting trial, and she was released under the conditions that she remain in her home with an ankle monitor and install an electric fence around her property that would alert police if she tried to leave her property. Now, G, he also is facing charges, right? So on August 30th, G's case went before a judge. Now, G's charges at this point had been reduced to a misdemeanor burying a person without a burial transit permit.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right? Because laws exist for a reason.
Yeah. So. It's so specific, though.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the state argued that this should be a continuing offense, meaning that his failure to get a permit should be considered an ongoing offense until a permit was obtained. Like, so that he's just been continually and committing this crime since
because
it
he never got the permit.
Right. But the judge, Michael Coopersmith, he said in a 3-page ruling that the physical act of burying occurs only once unless a body is exhumed. That this is a like succinct and final act, and it's not possible to construe this as a continuing offense at all. He also said of this particular charge, it had a 3-year time limit, and he said this time limit had passed even before police had learned of Mary's death. So the clock was ticking as soon as Mary was buried.
Mm.
So with this, he dismissed the case against G. Yeah.
Is that, like, normal? You can't just be like, oh, yeah, he buried his grandmother's body.
And
after his mom murdered her.
But there's a 3-year
and, like,
time.
No big deal.
Well, okay.
Let's let him go home and live his life.
I think the error comes in here. I guess it's not even an error, because I'll explain in a second. That they charged him with this particular charge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he has now exceeded the time limit because it had only happened at this one point in time. But and
they,
I know.
They didn't charge, they were charging him with not getting the burial transit permit, but they didn't about like covering up a major crime.
Well, okay, so this is actually important. So
okay.
Let me explain. So the state attorney, TJ Donovan, he says he's disappointed in this decision, of course, but also said the judge's ruling was well written and reasoned, and they didn't plan to appeal the decision. Now, Donovan also revealed that originally they had wanted to charge G with being an accessory mm-hmm. after the fact, but they couldn't due to a weird quirk in Vermont law that made it impossible to charge one family member when another is charged in the case.
Wait, did they? No, because we've done so many cases with multiple family members involved.
So this was a weird Vermont quirk.
So was it an actual like problem with how they set up the law? It wasn't intentional ever, right?
No. Well, I think
did
it
they
was
fix
like,
it? Is it fixed? I guess.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I like just asking too many questions. We need to fix this.
There's a lot all at once. Okay. Donovan said at the time that he had hoped that this weird loophole or quirk, as he called it in Vermont law, would be fixed in the following year. And I tried to do some light research to figure out, like, if this still exists. I am not a Vermont law expert, but my understanding is that this might no longer be the case. I hope it is not, but it was in existence at this time. So it's just like they couldn't do what they wanted to do and charge him with what he should have been charged with. So
if it's not done, it has to be fixed.
If it's not done. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, ask your Vermont lawyers,
please,
what's
fix
going
this.
On.
Multiple family.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So hoping it's no longer the case.
So many weird things in this case.
I know. And it's like also Vermont, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I love you, Vermont.
No.
Okay. Eat now, I do love Vermont with their pretty green hills and.
Wow. But
that would
but
be
this
a weird
law.
Quirk.
Yeah.
Now, while awaiting trial, S actually asked if her son could move in with her. And the two had been banned from having contact after the arrests, right? Now, thankfully, this request was denied, to which the prosecutor in the case said, allowing contact between the two will jeopardize the case. G is the most significant civilian witness in this case from the state's perspective. Allowing him to have unlimited access and contact with his mother, we think, really affects the integrity of the case in general. Right? Like, you cannot have your witness living with the person who's going on trial.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by September, despite feeling quite confident about the possibility of convicting S for second-degree murder earlier in the year, there were some rumbles about whether or not there was enough evidence to get a guilty verdict. They had been unsuccessful in locating Mary, and they were cognizant of the fact that there were no witnesses to what happened between the mother and daughter that night. Now, Donovan said he was still eager to get it before a jury despite this, but the lift was likely more than he'd liked for this case. Now, meanwhile, S's attorney tried to get statements that she had made to the Vermont State Police thrown out, stating that she was not fully aware of her rights during the questioning, but those statements were allowed to stay. Still, though, on June 2nd, 2011, over 4.5 years after Mary went missing, S took a plea agreement. She pleaded no contest, which again is not necessarily an admission of guilt, to manslaughter. Now, she was sentenced to 4 years and 9 months to 15 years in prison. She also pleaded guilty to illegally disposing of her mother's body. And as part of this, she had to agree not to serve as an executor of Mary's estate or to be a beneficiary of her will. She was also barred from benefiting from any book deals or movie rights stemming from this case. Now, what we're left with is that there was only one person alive who knew what happened on November 3rd, 2006, on Cambridge Road in Westford, Vermont. So after the plea agreement, it seems S's brothers took two different stances on what happened. One, Tom said, I believe my mother was most likely trying to take her own life rather than being placed in a nursing facility. S's brother Alfred said, I think my sister got very lucky with her plea agreement.
We are now going to listen to Amy's poem, The Distance Between Seasons, about Mary Wilcox, 78, missing since November 9th, 2006, from Westford, Vermont, read by Ashley Williams. Ashley has acted in more than 200 episodes of television and 20 movies, including How I Met Your Mother, Jim Gaffigan Show, Amber Brown, Something Borrowed, and Margin Call. She also began directing, writing, and producing 6 years ago. She wrote, directed, and starred in Meets, which premiered at Sundance and sold to Showtime. She directed the features Circle of Deception for Lifetime and Nashville Country Christmas starring Tanya Tucker and Keith Carradine for Paramount. She was chosen to participate in the 2025 DET program through ABC and has directed 2 episodes of The Rookie for ABC. She also founded Hallmark's women's directing program called Make Her Mark, a reciprocal mentorship program designed to set women up for success behind the camera.
The Distance Between Seasons. Along the western horizon, the geese are moving home again. To the stillness of the pine trees, they add their calls, a remembrance they trace through the sky each year. You used to hold in your hand the sugared snow still on the ground and call yourself wild with the knowledge of each step you placed across the earth. I want you to remember The way the wind loosened your hair from your nape, the soft curve of someone's hand clasped gently around your elbow. How many memories can I gather and hold for you, each lined up on my palm until you return again?
For more information about our show, please visit shegoesbyjanepodcast.com.
Bye, Vanessa.
Bye, Amy.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.